And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. Thanks so much for tuning in on this fine Thursday afternoon. And we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to talk to Patty Kelbrenner about foreign exchange students and the need for housing here in Juno. We'll talk to John Hunt by phone. He's going to talk to us about the July 4th Music Festival in Haines. We'll hear about the chamber concert, the part of the Juno Symphony from their 50th anniversary season. And, of course, as with every Thursday, we'll hear Arts Up, all the local arts news and everything that's going on this fine weekend and into the week. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll listen to first some national native news. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A high number of Native American children are placed in non-Native homes in South Dakota, according to the Coalition of Sioux Tribes for Children and Families. South Dakota has long been under fire for Indian Child Welfare Act violations. Tribes and others who work with welfare issues were among those watching a case involving the act, which the U.S. Supreme Court decided on this week. As Victoria Wicks reports, two South Dakota attorneys say the case is likely to have a narrow application and does not fundamentally alter the intent of the federal law to keep Indian families together.
It's a South Carolina case involving a Cherokee father who discovered his ex-fiancée was giving up their child for adoption and sought to intervene. The South Carolina Supreme Court gave custody of the child to the father, citing ICWA's authority to preserve ties with family and tribal members. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned that decision, finding that ICWA preserves a continued relationship which the biological father never had with baby Veronica. Chase Iron Eyes is counsel for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. He says he agrees with dissenting justices that the major purpose of ICWA is to ensure the continued citizenship of Indian children in their tribal nations. But Iron Eyes says the effect is probably fairly narrow.
It's going to cut unfavorably against future Indian fathers, a large portion of which are growing up in these poverty cycles, you know, the poverty environment, and the prospect of paying child support is daunting.
Rapid City Attorney Dana Hanna agrees that the ruling focuses on unwed Indian biological fathers who have never had custody or provided care for the child.
The court made a big, big emphasis on the fact that there was no relationship, I mean, emotional or anything other than biological, between the Cherokee father and the child.
Hanna says the decision does not weaken the federal civil rights lawsuit he and ACLU attorneys filed earlier this year against the State Department of Social Services, Seventh Circuit Court, and Pennington County State's Attorney. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Federal officials are holding a press conference today to discuss the establishment of the White House Council on Native American Affairs. President Obama signed an executive order Wednesday creating the council to ensure the federal government engages in a true and lasting government-to-government relationship with federally recognized tribes. Some of the trust responsibilities outlined in the order include healthcare, education, and housing. The council's job is to improve coordination of federal programs and the use of resources for tribes. Today is National HIV Testing Day. Take a test, take control is this year's theme. Tribal, urban, and federal health clinics encourage testing for American Indians and Alaska Natives. Rick Havercate is Senior Policy Analysis for the Office of Minority Health Resource Center. He says offering HIV testing should become standard policy for tribes.
There's a real need to make sure our tribal and urban clinics have certified testers and counselors in the rooms when they're offering that test. But if that just becomes more standard part of the language, it's sort of like offering your kid a test for strep throat. I mean, there's nothing embarrassing about that, and people have to realize that if we find out you have HIV, there are treatments now, there are services, HIV care, that we can get you into. And when people know their status, they're less likely to go out and continue risky behaviors.
Havercate talked about Native HIV and AIDS awareness and testing recently on the talk show Native America Calling. According to the CDC, some of the challenges facing Native communities with HIV prevention include poverty and culturally based stigma. During this month in 2012, Google and dozens of organizations launched the website EndangeredLanguages.com. The project put audio, video, and other language resources online to help in language revitalization efforts. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University, part of the California State University System, offering a part-time, 3.5-year online Master of Social Work program emphasizing work in rural and indigenous communities. A new semester begins January of 2014, with applications accepted in August. Learn more at humboldt.edu/socialwork.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser, and our first guest in the studio today is Patty Kelbrunner. Hi, Patty. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And you're here to talk to us about student travel schools. You're actually the local coordinator, and really this is about placing foreign exchange students into our community.
Yeah, finding host families and even welcoming families to, like, get them here and get them started in the school year, and then maybe we can find a more permanent family later on. But it's just it's a really amazing, like, cross-cultural experience, and I think it does a lot of good.
So as far as the foreign exchange students, how many are coming in this year?
Well, we've got a lot of students to place, but typically a school will be able to place up to 5 students in a school, and I think that usually that falls around 3 to 4. So maybe 6 to 8 students throughout the school district.
Okay. And are these mostly high school, middle school, or?
High school. High school students, all of them are between the ages of 15 and 18. And it's really like welcoming another teenager into your home. And they really do become part of the family. Host mom and dad become mom and dad. And it becomes, yeah, it's just a really incredible experience for the student, for the family, and for the other students that are able to broaden their perspective by getting to know those students in their peer community. So
so what are the students actually, how are they chosen to come to the United States? How does that work?
Well, it's their choice. They make the choice initially. Usually these are students of a fairly high maturity level, and they've got really good grades in school. The program, the success of the program is really based in academics. So in order to stay in the country, the students have to maintain a C or above grade average. And a lot of these students are coming from different countries, focus on different academics, and it's kind of all over the place. But they choose to come to the U.S. for this American cultural experience and for this perspective. And a lot of them, in order to be here, need to be speaking fluent English. And if not, we have tutors in place to help keep them progressing at a
So if you're
pace.
Welcoming a student into your home, more than likely you will be able to communicate.
Oh, yes, right? Immediately.
Okay. Oh, great.
In
okay.
most cases.
And so as far as the students, where do they come from? Or what countries have you seen represented?
Well, STS, the Student Travel Schools, represents 33 countries. Among which, let's see, I've got my little list here, Australia, Austria, Brazil, China, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Hungary, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, South Africa, South Korea, Sweden, Switzerland, Thailand, and
goes on.
The list
right.
goes on.
So do you know the students who are actually coming in right now?
I've never met them personally. What we are privy to, they write essays, they send pictures of themselves and their family and the home that they're from. And once we have a family in order that would like to host a student, then we can go through the available students and we can match them with a student that maybe shares similar interests or, you know, like activities, hobbies, sports, horseback riding, whatever, and
sure.
and we can find a match that will work with the family so that they can really develop a strong bond throughout the school year.
So if you are a host family, what kind of qualifications do you need to have to be a host family?
Well, to be a host family, there's a pretty wide range of different situations that are excellent for hosting an exchange student. What every student is what we do require and what the students, what the host families put out for the student. They're required to have a nice solid bed to sleep in, no air mattresses or cots or anything like that, and preferably their own space if possible for, you know, as a bedroom, although sometimes we've had students share spaces with, like, other kids in the family or whatnot, and a quiet, private place to study, 3 square meals a day, and a ride to and from school, since academics is such a big focus of this program. Outside of that, it's really developing the relationship with the student. I mean, you are inviting a teenager into your home, so you get a lot of the same, you know, they're making friends, they're learning about themselves, they're learning about life and what it means, and so what they really require more than anything is, like, a kind, nurturing, patient guide to help them get through this experience that they have here in America while they're also growing and developing as people.
Sure. And do you prefer families, or can single people?
Single people can. It's it just has to be okay with the student, okay with the student's real family across seas. And if it's okay with everyone on board, then we're okay with it. And we just have to make sure that's good across, you know, across the board. So.
Yeah. So what kind of, you know, we talked a little bit about before we came on air is that there's a lot of, you know, lifelong relationships developed through host families and exchange students. And you mentioned that you have some experience with that yourself. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, this is my first year doing this. And the biggest reason that I got into it was because when I was in high school, there were exchange students walking around. And having them in classroom environments and even just meeting them in the hallway or meeting them in these after-school activities that they don't get to have in their home countries. My good friend Enrico, who I'm still friends with, and she got to learn, you know, how to play a musical instrument, which is something that she couldn't have done back home. And then in the process of me doing those kinds of activities and meeting these people, drama, debate, they get involved in all these different activities and really get this awesome, like, Alaskan-American experience. I made friends that when I left high school and I traveled Europe, I could visit with them and stay with them, and they were more than happy and proud and excited to show me where they came from, because their experience here had been so rewarding and we had developed such a good connection. And I'm still friends with these people today, and I wouldn't give that up for anything. They mean so much to me. So I really do think that it's a positive thing for the students and families involved, and I really do think it's a positive thing in a small way, but like an increasingly productive way for the entire global culture.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
So as far as what a family would need, so you mentioned a bed, a comfortable bed,
yes,
a place, a quiet place to study, 3 square meals a day, a ride to and from school. How long is that commitment?
That commitment goes throughout the entire school year. And the student arrives, usually correspondence between the family and the student starts before they arrive. So you can start sending letters and pictures and photos of getting to know your student. And then they get here shortly before school starts. Maybe a week or so, and then they leave a week or so after school ends. I actually think that they can't stay longer than 10 days after the last day of school. So it really is for that school year, and that may or may not seem like a lot of time, but you grow so close during that period of time that it really is kind of a whirlwind adventure, and it's a really amazing thing to share with someone. So I'm a huge advocate of the program. And
so you have 6 to 8 families that you're looking for to host a foreign exchange student. And if a family is interested, what's a good place where they can actually contact you or check it out online?
Well, feel free to contact me. 723-9681 is the number that I'm using to help facilitate this. And as far as email goes, info@stsfoundation.org.
That's STS?
STSFoundation.org.
Great.
You can visit the website www.stsfoundation.org to learn more about the program itself and kind of a lot details about all of these things, hosting the students, where the students are coming from, kind of what to expect in terms of assimilating them into the culture here, what that process looks like, and that's stsfoundation.org.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Patty. We really appreciate it. And if there's a family out there that's willing to host a foreign exchange student, it seems like it would be really rewarding.
Yeah. Again, my number is 723-9681. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Brazilian music there for you to get you in the mood to host a foreign exchange student. And my name is Shona. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're going to hear a little bit of Bird Note, one of my favorites, and we'll be right back with our second guest after Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. The United States is home to more than 550 national wildlife refuges, havens for wildlife, like these black ducks and canvasbacks. But only one refuge can claim the distinction of being international, the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge. Established in 2001, this refuge unites vital habitats across the borders of Michigan and Ontario, along nearly 50 miles of the Detroit River and Lake Erie. The refuge straddles the Mississippi and Atlantic flyways, and its wetlands, marshes, and islands host millions of migratory ducks each year. Canvasbacks, handsome ducks with chestnut heads and pale gray backs, gather here by the thousands to feed on wild celery. One of the largest concentrations of black ducks on the continent can be found here, too. Bald eagles, while still endangered in the region, are making a notable comeback. And sandpipers fuel up along the water's edge during migration. What the Detroit River International Wildlife Refuge accomplishes for wildlife is truly exemplary. But the greatest feat? It does all this within the heart of a major metropolitan area. For BirdNote.org, I'm Mary McCann.
And thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. And on the phone with me right now from Haines, I have John Hunt. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Shona. Thanks for having us on, having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure. So we're here to talk about the third annual Music Fest up in Haines. It's very exciting.
Yes, it is. It's going to be 7 hours of music, and it is right in the old historic Fort Seward Parade Grounds. And this year we've also got a bunch of classic cars, which are going to be displayed out in the parade grounds as well. And we've got six bands from country and western to soul to funk to swing, some folk rock, some downright rock and roll, all Americana. And between those six bands, we've also got some solo performers going to keep the crowd together while we switch the stage for the different microphones and inputs that we need.
Oh, that's great. So can you tell me about some of the bands? Can you drop us some band names and we can...
Yes. The Irish Lords are a relatively new band, but it's not made up of relatively new Haniacs. In fact, it's one guy who was born in Sitka and has lived here forever. He's an artist, silversmith, and the other guys are local Haniacs as well. The Irish Lords play rock and roll.
Right.
Julia Scott and the PBRs are playing soul and Motown and some old 60s kind of rock and roll, as well as some 90s and 21st century music. The Divine Funk kind of says it all for that band. That is probably going to be our that's the band that is going to close out the show right before the fireworks at 11 o'clock. We've also got the Fish Pickers, who a lot of people in Juneau know. They play country and western and kind of old-time music. And Lunch Meat and the Pimentos, that's a band that I'm in that has been playing around Haines, Skagway, Juneau for about 25, 30 years. And we play swing and country swing.
We sure do love when you come to town.
Well, thank you. It's going to be a blast. We've also got Peter McDonald, who is a solo guitar player. We've got the Men of Note, which is a 12 to 14 voice vocal choir, all men's, kind of like a barbershop quartet, though it's got more than just four singers.
Wow, that sounds great. So can you know anything about the ferry schedule from Juneau here this coming?
Yeah. Next Wednesday on the 3rd, there are two ferries out, one in the morning and one in the evening, and then there's a ferry that comes up on the 4th as well, and then getting home, there's a ferry each evening at about 6 p.m., and so you can leave Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and be home by 10:30 each evening.
Perfect. What a great way. What a great way to see it. So what are some of the other things that happen during Music Fest? You mentioned these classic cars. So what kind of cars do you have lined up? And
well, it's a group from all over Alaska, and I believe they're called the All Alaska Car Mushers Association. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, right.
And they're coming in they're going to be in the parade in the morning, which is at 11 a.m. in downtown Haines. And there's also, in the afternoon, the early afternoon from about noon until 3 at Clinkett Park, there are all kinds of old-fashioned, there's sack races and there's a money toss and there's a watermelon and fried chicken and all kinds of food for lunch, and lots of fun, old-time, family-oriented stuff at Clinkett Park, which is just about 5 blocks away. And then here at the parade grounds during the music festival, we have Jeff Butcher, who is the owner of the Halsingland Hotel. He and I have put this together for the last 3 years.
Oh, great.
And the Halsingland Kitchen is also providing pulled pork sandwiches and half and whole crabs, and we'll have smoked salmon and beer brats, and there's beer and wine as well as pop and water and lemonade and that kind of stuff. And there's coleslaw, campfire beans, and potato salad and cornbread. And also, I have to mention, for the last 3 or 4 years, the Halsingland Kitchen has been making their own popsicles, and they are made here half a block from the parade grounds, and they make fudgesicles and coconut and mango and rhubarb ginger and watermelon mojito popsicles and blueberry buttermilk popsicles and cherry tangy froyo frozen yogurt. And so if it's hot or cold, there's going to be plenty of good food. And there's camping in the area, there's hotels in the area, there's bed and breakfasts in the area. There's lots of vehicles available for hire, and we hope to see a lot of you listeners come on up for the 3rd annual Music Fest.
Yeah, that's great. So, John, I just had a quick question. What was the impetus behind this Music Fest? You said you started it with Jeff, and how did that work?
Well, Jeff Butcher and I, Jeff is still on the local tourism advisory board, and actually he used to work at the Gold Belt in Juneau. He was the manager there before he bought the halting land, and he was on the Juneau Tourism Board, Convention and Visitor Bureau, I don't know. But he and I were both on the Haines Tourism Advisory Board, and just 3 years ago, actually it was 4 years ago, he said, we need to have a music festival on the 4th of July, and I said, you're right, Jeff, let's do that. And so 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, we started it and continued last year, and this will be our third one, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun. I love doing it because I'm a musician, and Jeff loves doing it because he's a tourism promoter, a lot like Arnie Olson, who owned the Halsing Land Hotel here for many, many years, and he was a big promoter of tourism as well. So I guess it's just in our blood.
That's great. That's great. So can you give us the details one more time as far as when, where, and what time?
Well, it is next Thursday, a week from today, the 4th of July. Third annual music festival starts at 4 p.m. and goes until 11 p.m. Adults are $10. Kids from 5 to 15 are $5, and anybody under that age is free. There's six bands and lots of other solo, five solo performers in between those six bands, and we'll be playing from 4 o'clock until 11 when the fireworks get set off.
That sounds like a great, great time. Well, John, thanks so much for talking to us by phone via Haines, and great time with your music festival this coming July 4th.
Thank you, Shona. Come on up, everybody.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And with that, it sounds like it's going to be a great week next week. With that, let's listen to Garrison Keillor with some Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 27th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Lucille Clifton, born in Depew, New York, 1936. Her family descended from slaves. Her father was a steelworker, and her mother worked in a laundry. Clifton went to college at Howard and then Fredonia State Teachers College. Her six young children inspired her first volume of poetry, Good Times. Her second book, Good News About the Earth, was a response to the social and political upheavals of the 1960s, and her third book, An Ordinary Woman, turned inward to consider her dual role as poet and woman. She also wrote several children's books aimed at raising awareness of Black history and culture. It's also the birthday of poet Frank O'Hara, born in Baltimore. While a student at Harvard, he met the poets John Ashbery and Kenneth Koch and got into writing poetry, then moved to New York, where he became part of the New York School of Poetry, influenced by abstract art and modernism. Frank O'Hara believed that poems should be improvisational, like action paintings. In books such as Oranges and Lunch Poems, he wrote very directly about his everyday experiences, taking walks, hanging out with painters, reading newspapers, listening to Billie Holiday. Frank O'Hara, who wrote in one of his poems, "Oh God, it's wonderful to get out of bed and drink too much coffee and smoke too many cigarettes and love you so much." It's the birthday of author and educator Helen Keller, born in Alabama in 1880. She lost her sight and her hearing due to scarlet fever or meningitis when she was just 20 months old. But in spite of her disabilities, her parents could tell she was extremely intelligent. She even invented her own simple system of sign language. Eventually, her family hired a tutor named Anne Sullivan, who taught Helen Keller to read letters spelt out on her palm. But at first, Helen could only mimic the letters that Sullivan taught her. But then one day, Anne Sullivan spelled out the word water on Keller's palm while Keller held her hand in the water from the well. Keller later wrote, "I stood still, my whole attention fixed on the motions of her fingers, Suddenly, I felt a misty consciousness as of something forgotten, a thrill of returning thought, and somehow the mystery of language was revealed to me. Within the next few hours, Helen Keller had learned 30 new words, and by the end of the month, she had stopped her temper tantrums. Within a year of Keller's breakthrough, newspapers all over the United States and Europe were writing about her achievements. When she was 8 years old, she met President Cleveland at the White House. She went on to college at Radcliffe, where she wrote her autobiography, The Story of My Life. And here's a poem by Frank O'Hara titled Autobiographia Literaria. When I was a child, I played by myself in a corner of the schoolyard all alone. I hated dolls, and I hated games. Animals were not friendly, and birds flew away. If anyone was looking for me, I hid behind a tree and cried out, "I am an orphan." And here I am, the center of all beauty, writing these poems. Imagine. A poem by Frank O'Hara, Autobiographia Literaria, from the selected poems of Frank O'Hara, published by Vintage Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And this is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's a fine, fine Thursday, and I'm very, very lucky to have in the studio with me some Juno favorites, I would have to say. Alexander Tutinoff and Franz Felkel. Nice to see you here. Thank you.
Good to see you too. Wonderful to be here.
Great. So you're here to talk about the 50th anniversary chamber concert. And actually, it's the 50th anniversary of the Juno Symphony, and it's the final chamber concert of what has been a fabulous season of symphony music here in Juno.
Yeah,
it's
very great.
It's been pretty crazy. Great. And so tell me about your concert, your upcoming concert.
Well, we're going to have two shows, and it's going to be a collaboration between me and Alex. And we're going to play five pieces.
I never counted.
But we'll start out, I'll play a little Bach, then he'll play some Brahms, and then we'll play a Mozart sonata together, and then we'll have intermission, and then Brahms sonata, and then a little special treat, Zigeuner Weisen by Sarasate, to end the program off.
So that's an actual title, and I still am not sure what it means, but yeah, the heavy hitters and the crowd pleasers will go to the second half, which means those who come will have to stay to the end.
That's a smart tactic, really. So for those of Juno audience members that don't know, can you fill us in on what your instruments of choice are there?
Yeah, I'm a violinist. I've played since I was about four. And
That's Franz talking.
Yes.
And Alex talking now, tuning in. But yes, I've also played since I was four, but my instrument was piano. I guess I wasn't good enough for violin.
And so how did you gentlemen meet each other?
It's a remarkable story, actually. That was my first visit to Juno to solo with a Juno Symphony on the 40th season.
Oh, wow.
And Franz actually was the other soloist in the program as a winner of the youth concerto competition. So that was our way to the stardom. And actually that concert opened a lot of opportunities for me in Juno. And I have been the artist in residence for the UAS and commuting several times a year, and we had some successes, but of course I became a Juno addict, and well, one of many, I'm sure, and made a lot of friends along the way. There has been a concert where the concertmeister of the Juno Symphony, Steve Tada, played the same Brahms sonata, and Franz turned pages for us.
So you showed me a video of that this morning, and I completely forgot about it.
Well, I don't forget anything.
Yeah, but the first time we met, I just have to say, we were backstage together, and that was my first time performing with the symphony or as a solo with a big group, and he made it a lot easier. We were cracking jokes backstage, and I completely forgot I had to perform at that point. And
My motto is, if you're not having fun, don't do it.
And I've kind of taken up that motto as well.
So, Alex, when you're not in Juneau, where do you reside and play?
My home for already many years is in Ashland, Oregon, where I teach piano at a local university, but I also have management, and so I record, but as I age, I go to competitions to be on the other side of the fence and judge the young rising stars and talents, which allows me to, you know, also be inspired and abreast with all these new trends in classical music. And believe it or not, there are new trends in classical music. It's not a contradiction of terms. So we really... I think are fortunate because we get to do what we love doing, and we're looking forward to every opportunity to share our passion, our love for music with the audience, which there will be two this weekend.
And with those modern trends, I mean, I've stayed strictly pretty much on the classical side, but now I'm starting to get in through my college experience in the past 4 years. I'm starting to get into more modern music. And on the last recital I had, I actually played a piece from 1995, which is one of the newest pieces I've played. And, you know, I really grew have really grown to love the music that's coming out today.
And this is a little bit of a tangent, but truly, let's say there was a lot of music written during the Beethoven's times and the Mozart's times, which did not pass the time of the test of time. And now there's a lot of music being written, way more than, say, 100 or 200 years ago. And plowing through all this flood of music and finding that 1% that's phenomenal and that will pass the test of time is, I think, just an incredible, fun task.
So you guys, you know, just kind of being in the studio with you, it seems like you guys have a really natural rapport with each other. Maybe it's knowing each other for 10 years also. But what's your rehearsal process like?
Well, you already named our main asset, I think, because we did not have... Well, actually, I mean, we would like to have more rehearsal time, but over the years, we would, whenever we coincide, we read... different music, and we see that our understanding of music is quite similar. We biologically are not siblings, but it definitely feels like there could be some connection on a deeper musical level. And also I have to thank Franz for actually flying to Seattle and renting a car and coming to rehearse with me in my neck of the woods in the southern Oregon. And, of course, we're looking forward to spending the rest of today and most of tomorrow, you know...
Getting everything together.
Getting everything. And, but we know individual parts, and I studied Francis' part, and he studied my part away from each other. It's just, you know...
Yeah, and we do have an actual connection in that musical mindset, the intellectual mindset, I think. And we get together. We have the same sense of humor, which comes out in the music, I believe.
Scary thought.
I know. but, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of getting a few hours in there and talking to each other of what do we want to do in certain places,
or their ideas, yeah.
Hey, we need to hold here, you know, I have this big leap, can we cut it back just a second?
Sure. So I have a few more questions, but I did want to get the details out here a couple of times so people don't miss anything. So you're playing Saturday and Sunday, and this is out at UAS, and it's in the library, the Egan Library.
Yes. Yeah, the unusual place. That's the quietest place on campus. So.
Especially right now. Yeah. And can you tell me the times again, please?
Yeah, Saturday is at 8 p.m., and on Sunday is 6 p.m.
Okay, great. So, and the tickets are at the usual ticket location.
Heartside, Jack, and then at the door.
Great, and I bet you could find a lot of information online on the Symphony website here. Yeah. So, I have another question for you, Franz. So you just graduated from school.
Yep.
And can you tell us a little bit about kind of your studies in school and where that's kind of taking you next?
Yeah. Well, I started here, like I said, when I was four, with a local violin teacher, Guoha Shah. Who many out there in the community know. And then when I got into high school, I started studying with Linda Rosenthal, which we all know who that is, and that was a wonderful experience. And then when I graduated from high school, I decided I want to go to UAF. And so now I've been studying with Dr. Kathleen Butler Hopkins, and she has taught me so much in the past 4 years, not only musically, but life lessons. She's a wonderful lady, a wonderful person, kind heart, and will be there for you, whatever you need. So I just got my bachelor's in violin performance, and then I will student teach next fall in the school district up north in Fairbanks, and get my ed degree, my bachelor's in education. And then hopefully I will do some auditions either this upcoming spring for grad schools or the next year after that. So,
great.
Yeah.
Great.
We'll see after that. You never know where life turns. So.
It's true. And Alex, what's up next for you after this fine concert?
Well, I'm very happy to be finishing my fifth year of being a voting member for the Grammy Academy. So I don't think I'm going to continue. It's just a lot of listening and too much work. But I just came back. I'm still on the Florida time. I finished my 10-day festival, music piano festival, in Gainesville, Florida. And the next thing will be I fly to... Where am I flying? I think it's California, and I spend a week teaching retired people chamber music. And after that, I have a piano camp, which is a recruiting tool for our university. So the summer, I'm staying put, but then again, it's back to traveling. China, Russia, Italy, Portugal, something. That's basically the life of the artist.
Indeed.
And I'm not complaining.
No. So I would love for you to talk just a minute more about the music that you'll be playing this weekend on Saturday and Sunday.
Well, the Bach, I'm playing two movements from his first sonata, solo violin sonata. That's the start out. And
then I will play Brahms, the intermezzo, from the late Brahms legacy, and it's something that I've played here, and it's almost like I have received a request or pen to do a repeat performance of that. Plus it's Brahms, it sets the mood for the more Brahms.
Yeah, and then we'll play Mozart right after that, his E minor sonata, which is a great sonata. It's only two movements long, it's pretty short. But he wrote it right around the time of his mother's death, when he was coming back from, I believe it was Paris. And it's a really great Mozart. It doesn't sound like Mozart, typical Mozart.
It's very, very deep, it's an experience.
You want to talk about the Brahms a little bit?
Well, it's the Brahms wrote three sonatas for this combination of instruments, piano, violin, and this is his final, biggest, and most significant, important piece of music, and because it's so heavy and it raises the roof kind of in more than one ways, Then we'll lighten it up with the crowd pleaser from Sarasate, right?
Zagorna Weizen, which is Gypsy Airs
in
German. And Sarasate is a Spanish-born. He studied in Paris, and he's writing Hungarian gypsy music, not Spanish gypsy music, flamenco gypsy. So,
sounds great.
It's interesting.
Sounds great.
He pulls it off.
He pulls it off.
Hopefully I will, too.
Oh, good. Good. So, tell us those dates one more time. I'll tell them. This Saturday and this Sunday, and the Saturday show is at 8 p.m., and the Sunday show is at 6 p.m. And
this both at the Egan Library.
Great. Great. Well, thank you so much, Alexander Tutinoff and Franz Völkel, for joining me in the studio today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure's all ours.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. And in the studio with me is Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
It's not raining at the moment.
No, and I'm digging it.
Yeah. It's nice and cool.
It's very
cool. It feels very good in here.
Yes.
Okay, so it's, a midsummer week, I will say.
Indeed.
And, you just were speaking with one of the highlights that's coming up, but let's see. All this month, Goldtown's doing the Filipino Film Festival. I'm sure you've talked with those folks a little bit about the things they're doing. There is the Spirit of Admiralty race going on, in case you have sailors in your midst. You should watch out for that. Tomorrow is the deadline to apply for the UAS Klukwan Summer Program. It takes place up in Klukwan and outside of Haines, and you learn all sorts of stuff. Get college credit for it. It's cool. 800-478-6653 to get signed up for that. Let's see. And there's always the organ concert. Nice place to go have lunch.
On Fridays?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I like to mention that periodically. Food Truck Friday this Friday, and it's going to be gorgeous again because that's the new deal.
that's what Food Truck Friday means.
That's right. Sunshine. It is the City of Juneau Pipe Band and Highland Dancers.
Oh, fun.
As well as the Queens of the Sound Table. So it should be a raucous, exciting, yeah. Maybe we'll put the pipe and drum outside.
Ooh.
I think we've been having most of the music inside, but I think maybe this is an outside deal. I'm not sure.
I went by there last week, and it was packed.
Poetry.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
it was so great. I mean, it wasn't too packed that you couldn't go, but it was very crowded.
No.
It was comfortably crowded.
Yeah. I'm hoping to encourage more food trucks. We have a few in town, and it's been hard to get them there, but, you know, we have a couple hundred people there hungry.
Yeah, totally. Looking for food trucks.
Looking for food trucks. So there you go. Okay, 5:30 to 7:30 out at Nugget Mall. They're having a festival of fun charity carnival, pie eating contests, popcorn, cotton candy, things like that. Good idea. Up at the Timberline Lodge, we got Tom Loker on piano and Wayne Norland. Always wonderful jazz. We had them, they piloted the Music on the Fly thing for us. And people out there were just amazed. They had no idea that we had such jazz people in town. And you can hear them every weekend, or I guess it's every Friday.
They've been playing a lot every Friday. Yeah.
Check it out up there. Mod Carousel is in town. This is a wonderful review cabaret event at Perseverance Theater.
That's right.
For the weekend. It's Seneca, who grew up here, and he does a great job, and it's just a wonderful show. So I think they have tickets at the door, or you can go online, but not to the June Arts and Humanities Council. They have a different online system.
Brownpapertickets.com,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Okay. At 10:30 p.m., let's see, we've got Scorcher Live at the Alaskan.
Oh, cool.
Saturday, the Alaska Summer Theater Intensive begins. Do you want to speak more directly about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, we're actually doing our registration and barbecue on Sunday. We're going to start it Sunday just because we had an instructor that needed to be in Bali, of course.
Oh,
I know, I know. So rough for her.
Bali Douglas.
Wait a minute, that's our next party, Bali in Douglas. Yeah, well, anyway, there's a barbecue. It's Alaska Summer Theater Intensive, and it's Perseverance Theater. It's training for adults, and it's going to be awesome. Voice, playwriting, and what else are we doing? Oh, acting, of course.
Oh, well, there's that.
Oh, yeah. So our registration and welcome barbecue is Sunday at 6.
All right, and let's see, the Festival of Fun continues on Saturday out at Nugget Mall. And, of course, the chamber concert that you were just speaking with Alexander Tutanov and Franz Felkel about Saturday and Sunday.
I have to say, they have this connection that is amazing to even be in the room with. It's
yeah.
pretty great.
Yeah, and both of them are, it's wonderful music. And I would have to say, to remind you that the Sunday one, which I had been thinking was in the afternoon, is not. It's at 6 o'clock. So that will get in the way of something else, which we'll mention in a moment. We also have Mod Carousel on Saturday. Sunday morning has the ukulele jam, or whatever you want to say. And at 6 p.m., as I mentioned, it's out at the Egan Library, not at 3 o'clock like you'd think. So don't go there then. At 6:30, it's Music on the Fly out at the airport, and it's Jazzberries this week.
Oh,
it'll be
cool.
Delightful. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's in the baggage claim area. I love that sort of a non-specific location, but it's fun, and, you know, there's plenty of room there, and meet your friends and come on out.
Maybe they should open a bar in baggage claim.
Well, I think that maybe there's you can actually hear, the acoustics in the airport are very strange, so you can hear the music from downstairs upstairs.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Very interesting.
Well,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I don't know if you can hear it in the bar because I haven't gone in there, but that's an idea. Monday is Go Fish Camp with Zach Gordon Youth Center. That's going to be their weekend camp. If you're interested in that, call them and sign up for the week. It's 4 days long. Noon on Monday at the State Historical Collections, Jean Morgo Mew. I don't know how to say her last name.
I thought it was Mew. Well, it looks like Mew, doesn't it?
Yeah, Mew. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. In Pursuit of Alaska, an anthology of travelers' tales from 1879 to 1909. Should be quite interesting, and one of these days I'll tell him to put the pronunciations in my little thing here so I can do that. Let's see. There's also Adventure Treasure Chest Camp, which is for the older kids at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Tuesday, there is Family Night for Preschoolers at the Valley Library. And Wednesday, there's Story Time with Crafts. So there's a public meeting about, I think that happened last week. I won't mention it then. Boxing Raindrops is over at Island Pub. It's starting at 7. At 8 p.m., Devil's Club is live at the Viking. 9 p.m., there is Fish Fest at the Twisted Fish Patio,
which is a fundraiser for our very local radio station, KXLL Excellent Radio. It's going to be super cool.
Which is followed immediately by the fireworks.
Kaboom.
Yeah, and everybody stays up for that, but everybody's going to get up bright and early on the 4th of July and come down to the Jack for pancakes.
What? What do you mean?
Look outside. Did you see Spikey's all dressed up, ready to cook pancakes? It is Flapjacks, a fundraiser for the Jack. And this is a long-time tradition. So a KB over at Hearthside said, you know, I've been missing those pancakes they used to do at the Jack or at the Armory when he was growing up. So we're back to doing it, pancakes at the Jack. $5 for a plate of regular pancakes and $8 for patriotic pancakes with blueberries, strawberries, and whipped cream.
Ooh.
Patriotic. And then you'll pancakes. Be right there ready to watch the parade.
Oh, so, yeah. What time is that starting?
It's going to start at 8:30, and we'll probably cook pancakes until noon if we can keep it up.
Are you cooking them?
There's a whole squadron. We have a whole fleet of Paul Bunyan type people.
I want to go during your section though. Can you give me a
I'll be there the whole time. That's how it is over there. And you know, I have a question, because that Thursday would ordinarily be the day that you and I would talk next.
That's right.
But that's 4th of July, and I'm sorry, but I bet you're not here and I'm not here. And
that's right.
We would ordinarily talk about it being First Friday, next Friday.
Exactly.
And I will just, I don't know what we're going to do.
I know
what we're doing.
Well, right now we should just keep talking about that if you have the information.
I don't have it all, but I do know what we have at the Jack, and we will put the little flyer together. We are having Wayne Painter, Ray Watkins, and Jim Bowen. Wayne and Ray are carvers and woodworking people, and Jim does ceramics, and it's very beautiful.
You can come in on Friday.
I can come in on Friday. Okay, then.
That's right. This is awesome. We just got the word. Nancy's going to come in next Friday.
The word of God came in.
I know.
Which is wonderful. So we'll get it all caught up to date by then. But, yeah, it's First Friday just sort of sweeps in there. Always around the 4th of July, it's kind of a problem. Because nobody knows exactly, is there going to be a First Friday? Should there not be a First Friday? Whatever, but we'll have one, and it'll be fun, and all that sort of stuff. So what else do we need to worry about? Do we have time to...
We do have some time.
I don't have a whole lot to discuss other than I think Perseverance is getting there. I just got a call from Boston saying he's starting to print season tickets. So I believe that the announcement may have been made about your TBA.
We're so close. I can taste it.
Yes, okay. Well, so an exciting season is coming up at Perseverance. We are thinking about having a volunteer, people who are interested in becoming arts volunteers or who have been arts volunteers for a really long time. We're thinking about having sort of a training time or an opportunity for the experienced volunteers to talk about how to be a volunteer, some tips. We're going to, you know, we're tending towards electronic ticketing and scanners and things like that. So some information on how to handle all that sort of stuff. That'll be at the end of August. And so if you're interested in becoming an arts volunteer for any of the arts organizations, give me a call or send me an email to nancy@jahc.org, and I can get you on the list to be invited to that event. You'll hear about it, I'm sure. But we just were talking about how things are changing, but we all use the same venues. So we should... I'll share our little tips and trades on how to be a good volunteer.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, what fun. Any excuse for a party.
Really, yes.
And we also have the Grantsmanship Workshop coming up in August. This is an opportunity. It's about a week long, and it is an opportunity for people actually from all over the state. And we do have some people from Ruby signed up to come already. The Grantsmanship Foundation runs the workshop. It's on how to write grants, how to look for grants. Kari and I took it when we offered it in 2009. I found it really beneficial. If people are interested, give me a call at the Jack, 586-2787. They have a special deal for social services groups, and we have a couple of scholarships available for nonprofits that are small nonprofits with budgets under $500,000. So give us a call about that. Last time we did it, there were about 25 people, and they came from like Sandpoint and all over the place. Nice opportunity to find out what's going on in the rest of the state while learning how to write grants.
Wow, fabulous.
Fun.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Nancy.
All right.
Nancy DeJourney here with Arts Up. And where can we find all this fabulous calendar information every week?
Oh, you can go on to our website, which is jahc.org, and it's right there on the front page. Or you can go to ktoo.org. Same calendar.
Isn't that fabulous? Yeah. Thanks, Nancy. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Shona.
All right, and thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon this fine Thursday. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators in the Valley and Ock Bay, tuned to 103.1, in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, at 101.7, Gustavus listens on 88.1, 91.9 serves Huna, and Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait hear KTOO on 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. Up tomorrow, you have a fabulous show with the people from, Bob Banghart's here tomorrow, Saffron Hayes talking about her travels. Well, thanks so much. Have a fabulous afternoon.
The reason I came to Africa is because Africa's rising.
President Obama begins a week-long trip to Africa with a visit to Senegal.
While all eyes are on the ailing former South African president, Nelson Mandela.
It's Thursday, June 27th.